Welcome to the podcast that helps you build wealth and thrive in a world of out-of-control central banks and big governments. This is the Rebel Capitalist Show.
All right, guys, it gives me a great deal of pleasure to bring someone back to the Rebel Capitalist Show. I have been wondering what on earth is going on with the price of gold. So this guy, Ronnie Stufferle, has all the answers, I guarantee. Ronnie, welcome back to the show, my friend.
Hi, Josh. Good to see you.
Give us the answers, bud. What's going on with the price of gold? First of all, I want to preface by saying today the CPI came out for the month of June. So this is July 13th, and the CPI was 9.1% trailing 12 months, or year over year, however they say it. And it was expected to be 8.8, going up from 8.6. And I remember I did a live stream on it this morning, Ronnie, right when that news came out. And I think it was still like pre-market, but gold actually traded down slightly on the news. So I have my hypothesis, but I want to hear your theory on what's going on there.
Well, it is up now, I think, almost a percent.
I think the miners were way up too, weren't they?
Yeah, miners were. Equities were down initially, and now they're up. I mean, it's a bit like, I don't know, bad news or good news. It seems, especially when it comes to employment numbers. From my point of view, it's the big question basically is, when will the Federal Reserve hit the pause button, and when will they reverse? I mean, that's all probably that the financial market participants care about at the moment. And this is already quite telling, because, you know, when I talk to other asset managers, when I talk to strategists, to analysts, this is like the only question that everybody discusses. While I would say, like, in a healthy monetary system, nobody would really care about that if they raise by 75 bips or 50 or whatever. Probably they wouldn't know who's heading the Federal Reserve, or perhaps there wouldn't be a Federal Reserve. But so I think this is already quite telling that this is really, nobody's talking about business models anymore. Nobody's talking about innovations. Nobody's talking about valuation. Everybody only cares about Fed policy, and this is already telling us how flawed this system is and how addicted we are to liquidity, to low rates, to very aggressive central bank policy, and you know, now we're in like in the cold turkey phase, but the market is telling us, well, we don't like that. And I mean, the first half of the year, we saw an enormous amount of wealth destruction. It is 36% of world GDP that was destroyed in capital markets. I mean, that's a big number. That's a massive asset price deflation. And I think, in the kind of the handbook of the Federal Reserve, they tried, you know, with this reverse wealth effect, they tried to achieve a soft landing. And I mean, this already in theory, it sounds crazy. Yeah? And we are now really seeing that in practice, it just doesn't work. And we are already in a recession. I think in the Eurozone over here, the situation is much worse than in the US.
So therefore, worse, Ronnie, because most of my viewers and listeners are based in the US. So I'd love to get kind of the boots on the ground intel there as to what's happening in Europe. I'm assuming you're talking about inflation rates or the loss of purchasing power because incomes aren't going up at the same rate of inflation, or what are you referring to specifically?
Well, I have to tell you, the situation in Europe is very, very frightening. Yeah. I'm currently here in working from home in Vienna, which is 600 or 700 kilometers away from the Ukrainian border. Mm-hmm. So actually we've got lots of refugees. They go to school with my kids, and they're doing really well. So this is one part. I mean, the enormous tragedy that is happening not too far away from us. Right. The second thing is obviously, I mean, now we're in summer, but everybody is scared as hell regarding the energy situation in winter. Austria does import roughly 80% of its natural gas from Russia. Wow. So if Mr. Putin says, well, you know, that's it, yeah, enough, then actually, you know, they will have to you know, limit gas deliveries, and then, you know, there's already discussions going on from politicians. Well, who comes first? Is it gonna be, you know, households, or is it gonna be the industry? Then they're coming up. Some EU politicians say, well, you have to take cold showers. This is gonna hurt Putin. I think it's good for your body, but I think Vladimir Putin really couldn't care less. So it's really ridiculous. And it's scary. It's embarrassing from a political point of view, but it's really a dire situation. And then, of course, I mean, you're wearing a and the Fed hat. I should send you and the ECB hat, because on a relative basis, the Federal Reserve did a much better job. In the Eurozone, we didn't even hike rates yet. They are now really talking about it, and it's going to happen very soon. But we are so far behind the curve. And actually, as we are now already in a recession, not officially, I mean, they would have to lower interest rates already. So I think
what is the inflation running in where you are, officially?
It's
the headline
it's
number.
It's like 8.5%, something like that.
Very similar. And what's their overnight rate?
Basically zero. I mean, it used to be used to be negative. At least that was changed, but now there will be a probably 50 bips hike. But still, I mean, it's massive wealth destruction happening. And I mean, I attended some you know, some summer parties from big banks over here. So first quarter was a disaster, between -8%, -10% for the balanced portfolio. Second quarter was even worse. So they're sending now basically the results of the first half to their clients, -20%, -25%. And then on top, you know, an enormous amount of inflation. So this wealth destruction that has happened over the last 6 months is enormous. And I think it would be very naive to believe that this will not have an effect on consumption. George, so? I was in
the question after that, though, because we're talking about the demand component of the equation.
Yeah.
So do you think they will create enough demand destruction because of the lowering of the asset prices to maybe at least get the CPI or the inflation rate to flatline, if not come down a little bit over the next few months? Or do you think that there's just no way possible that they can destroy enough aggregate demand to make that happen because the supply side is so constrained?
Yes, I mean, I think that would be the game plan to create a mild recession via demand destruction to get inflation down. And you know, I'm seeing in lots of different pockets, I'm seeing that inflation expectations are already coming down big time. And I mean, I think that the big how should I say that the big conundrum at the moment is this massive asset price deflation that we're seeing, mm-hmm. and on the other hand, consumer price inflation. This interplay is really crucial. I mean, let's have a look at, you know, commodity prices. Yeah, our base metals were down already big time. Then agricultural commodities. Now oil is following. If we have a look at the various sectors in the in equity markets. Autos minus down 40%, home building, I think 42%, retail down 35%. So a lot of deflationary moves have already happened. And I think, you know, now with another interesting thing, I don't know what your view on that is. We're seeing that for the 10-year break-even inflation rates, for example, you know, they were like 3% in April. Now they are 2.3%. So that's a pretty big down move for the five years. Basically the same down move. They were like 2.7%. Now they're 2.1%. But on the other hand, University of Michigan inflation expectations, so the consumer, they're still at 5.3%. And what I'm seeing, George, is that really, I think what all those very sophisticated models that our beloved central bankers and economists have, I think they underestimate the psychological factor of inflation. And if I talk to relatives, if I talk to clients, if I go to a restaurant, if I talk to whomever, inflation is the topic. So we're getting like a bit like an emerging market mindset regarding inflation. And I think, you know, although they say that, you know, we have to anchor inflation expectations and they're still well anchored, I don't think so. Everyone I talk to will raise prices. Everybody is really feeling hurt by high inflation. I just came back from a sailing trip in Croatia.
Croatia, one of my favorite places. You know, I spent about three, you know, I was in Croatia and they told me, oh, go down to Montenegro, check it out, you'll love it. Yeah. I'm like, okay, because I was in Dubrovnik. So I went to Split, Dubrovnik. I went down there. I was only going to spend a couple of days. I ended up spending like 2 months.
Oh, it's beautiful. I mean, it's full of Americans now. You know, they're using the dollar strength.
Yeah.
And funnily enough, Croatia will introduce the euro January next year. I told them.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I'm not sure if that's the right decision, but anyways,
they want to rethink that, huh?
Yeah, but everyone I talk to, you know, prices at restaurants and at the marina and everything was really expensive. But everyone said, well, you know, we had those two crazy COVID years, so this is kind of the last hooray. We'll now just spend the money and have a good time, but we know that fall and winter will be tough, and we've got no clue if we will be able to go on a proper vacation next year in summer. So this is really the mindset that we're seeing now, and this is something really, really, really concerning from my point of view. And this is clearly, I mean, this is a stagflationary environment that we are facing. And I don't think that many investors are really prepared for stagflation.
Within stagflation, do you think we'll get some disinflation like we typically do? And when I mean disinflation, I mean, let's say CPI is at 9.1, it gets up to 10, and then Q3, Q4, maybe it drops back down to 8 or 7 before we get the next wave of monetary stimulus or fiscal stimulus, whatever, that takes it, you know, back up to the next wave. I mean, you see that happen in the 1970s. And one of the main reasons I'm saying that, Ronnie, is because of this dichotomy we have with the front end and the back end of the curve, right? Where, like, as you were talking, I kind of just checked at my screen or looked at my screen, and the 10-year, you would think it would have just ripped higher today as far as the yield on the news, but it's actually, I think it's down for the day. If my computer's giving me an updated reading here, it's saying it's at 2.91, so it's down on the day, while the 1 year, the yield shot up, and it currently, according to CNBC, is at 3.21. So the 1 year right now is trading 3.21, and the 10-year is trading at 2.91. I mean, so what that tells me is that the long end of the curve is saying, okay, great, Fed, or okay, we got higher CPI, fantastic. That means the Fed is going to hike faster, which means we're going to get to a recession faster than we otherwise would have. And then that's where we get maybe some disinflation because of a significant recession that prompts the policymakers and the central planners to come back in with a CARES Act 2.0 or something like that, which takes us up into our next wave of inflation within a stagflationary decade. Do you see it like that, or do you see it different?
Well, yeah, no, I'm seeing it that way, and actually, in one of my funds, we had a hard time, buying long duration and going for the 10 years and the 30 years. It's not a marriage. It's just a brief affair
Fling.
that we're having. But I think it's a great trade at the moment. And I think I totally agree with your assumption. So I think the market now, I mean, first of all, the market expects 60 basis points of easing in 2023. So basically, the market is telling us the Fed will tighten so much over the next half year.
Yep.
That it causes the economy to roll over, resulting in economic weakness, and this will cause the Fed to ease the following year. So it's like, I don't know who said that. I think Kevin Muir said it's like racing to a stoplight so you can wait longer. The interesting thing is, we've got one file where we're basically collecting lots of analysis and comments from Fed representatives, and they do have the worst track record ever. I think my daughters would have a significantly better track record in economic forecasting. So it's interesting. They also admitted, I don't know what the wording was of Jay Powell. He basically said, we've got no idea about inflation, how it's building. I mean, that's
or as Bullard or someone, they said we were surprised by how little we know inflation or something like that.
so I mean, they're now really admitting that they have no clue what happened and what's happening, but they still can see years into the future and make the right choices. So I think at the moment it is really, our reports are called In Gold We Trust, and we wrote one report about the topic of trust. And I think that it's now really the Fed has lost an enormous amount of credibility. And I think in our world, I mean, nobody really believes what the Federal Reserve says or does.
Yeah, there's no credibility to lose in our world.
Yes, but for the Wall Street guys, typical guys reading the FT and the Wall Street Journal, they still believe the stuff that the Federal Reserve communicates. And I think for them, they also they know that they kept saying, well, it's only transitory. Then they made this U-turn, and I think now the Federal Reserve really wants to regain some credibility. This is what it's about at the moment.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So let's just, and I want to get back to the price of gold too, by the way, and silver and a lot of commodities, copper as well. But I'm trying to think through, okay, so let's just assume we go into a recession, or we're in one now, and it gets more severe going into 2023, towards on the front page of the media, on the homepage of CNBC, the average Joe and Jane not only realizes that we have inflation and they're paying more at the pump and the prices of the stuff they need is going up, while maybe the prices of the stuff they don't need is going down, like retail clothing or something. But then they realize that, hey, we are in a recession. They start to understand what that word means, and they start to get pissed off because they know that most likely results in a lower standard of living. And let's just assume for a moment that the CPI is starting to trend down. So relatively speaking, it's still very high. Let's say 7%, 6%, but at least it's coming down. So Biden and Powell and Yellen can come out and say, oh, we told you, we got it under control. It's on its way back down to 2%. What do you think the policy response would be in that world?
Well, this is basically the answer to your previous question. I think we'll see some inflation waves, and we've made this analogy with the COVID waves, and I think that the first one was really tough, and nobody knew, lockdown. What's happening now? Is it gonna kill all of us? then we found out, well, it's not that bad. And then the second wave hit us. But people became more resilient and better prepared. And then the third wave and fourth wave and whatever, how many waves there are, I think it got less and less dramatic, and people were better prepared. People knew how to act in this environment. So,
right.
so I would kind of make this analogy with inflation. I think it's going to change the spending behavior. It's going to change the investment behavior. But I think, you know, I am seeing disinflation, although it sounds crazy at 9.1% CPI print. But I'm seeing it for the next couple of months.
Yeah.
You know, we're seeing that the strong US dollar and the weaker oil prices, they will feed through over the next couple of months. And as I've said, inflation expectations, and then obviously collapsing equity and bond markets, recession fears, that's all disinflation. And I think, you know, as soon as inflation comes down, Powell will say, well, great job, Jay. You did tremendously well. Now we can hit the pause button.
Okay.
And I think this is going to happen at some point. This will have to happen. I would, you know, it's hard to make a forecast. I would say somewhere early fall. And from my point of view, they will have to reverse at some point. Yeah, I don't know if it's going to be this year or early next year, but they will have to reverse.
So disinflation will kind of give them cover.
Yes.
At least pause.
Yes.
And then they'll say, well, we're data dependent. We're data dependent. And then if the data comes in worse, then they'll go ahead and start lowering rates, even if inflation is still above their 2% target, let's say.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I think it's really what's going on in markets at the, you know, Jim Reed, he came out and said that that's like the worst year in bond markets since I think 1788. Then the Macro Compass ELF, he came out with a credit impulse chart. And actually, what has happened over the last couple of weeks, this is significantly worse than during the great financial crisis. So I think we have already seen in the more liquid markets, in fixed income, in equities, and obviously also in crypto, we already saw what's the consequences. And the less liquid markets, especially real estate and private equity, they are now following. So everybody telling me, well, the Fed will hike until something breaks. I'm seeing already cracks all over, yeah, and many things already broke. I talked to a guy from the art market. He called me and said, yeah, we've got great paintings, and I make you a special deal. And you know, this was like the super bull market over the last couple of years, yeah, expensive art. And I asked him, you know, do you already see any impact? And he said, no, it's all going so well. But I think I told him, well, let's talk in a couple of months. I think it will be different because liquidity will be drying out, and you'll have a hard time. So this is all happening now. And therefore they will have to reverse, obviously. But we also know, and I'm on record saying that this will be the shortest and the shallowest rate hike cycle in the history of the Federal Reserve. At some point they will have to reverse, but you know, let's face it, every round of QE of lowering rates of fiscal stimulus, it became bigger and bigger, and you know, to reinflate this everything bubble after basically the everything crash, that's gonna demand quite a lot of creativity and very aggressive behavior, and you know,
more
we know that the
units.
Yeah. So
to put it simply.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what I think many people that I talk to kind of underestimate, because we're all conditioned like Pavlovian dogs, and to be honest, we are now already talking for a couple of minutes about this U-turn and how it's going to impact markets. But I think everybody expects after 2020, well, you know, massive crash, and then they stepped in and everything was soaring again. I think what nobody really has in the cards is just a nasty sideways market, a market with lots of bear market rallies, with really tough conditions, and you know what were the biggest trends in asset management? It was passive investment. Yeah. It was ESG, obviously. Yeah. So from my point of view, going forward, you really need active asset managers. It will be really, really tough. It will be challenging going forward. And I just don't see that, like, after 2020, we'll just, you know, they will reverse course and then everything is going to go up again like previously. I just don't see that.
Hey guys, I want to remind you to check out Rebel Capitalist Pro. This is the incredible online investment forum that I have with investment experts Lynn Alden and Chris McIntosh. It includes professionals such as Patrick Serezna from Macro Voices. He specializes in options. Tony Greer, commodity trading. Jason Hartman, real estate. And Brent Johnson with macro economics. If you want to build wealth and thrive in this world of out of control central banks and big governments, Rebel Capitalist Pro is the resource you need. So check it out today at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. We'll see you inside with the fellow Rebel Capitalists that are taking their investing to the next level. Yeah, that's kind of the potential blind spot, maybe, for the market that has been so conditioned, to your point, to just buy the dip.
Yeah.
And they forget, especially in an inflationary environment, people assume that equities are always just a place to hide. It's not always true. And it's, you know, 72 to 74, the S&P went down by 50% in nominal terms.
Yeah. Yeah.
For heaven's sakes. So... yeah, we could see the same thing play out here. Now, going back to the Fed's response, now I want to start talking about gold, because I think if that environment comes to fruition, and you know, who knows what will happen, but if they do a CARES Act 2.0 and the Fed has to go back to dropping rates to zero and quantitative easing infinity, just more of what they've done for the past 12 years, gold seems very, very attractive. And you know, I tell people on my live streams that I'm very bullish on gold long term, and I think you should always own it. It should always just be 10% of your portfolio at any price, because to me, gold is insurance, and it's not something you buy to get rich. It's just something you buy to stay rich, so to speak.
Yeah.
And now the miners might be more speculative. But as the price of gold comes down, I get more and more excited as a long-term bull. I'm like, yeah, I want it to go down to 1500. I wish it would crash. So then it gets really cheap, you know, over the, relatively speaking, when you're looking at a long-term time horizon. So what's your view on the price right now? Is it responding to the CPI print, because the gold market assumes that yes, CPI is high, but that means the Fed is going to hike rates even higher, which is negative for gold? Or is it something where the market is sniffing out maybe a stock market crash, and they know that in that environment, like a Lehman or a 2020 March, that gold takes a dive because it's the only thing where that has a bid? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think if we have a look at the chart, gold in comparison to real yields, actually gold should be probably like $200 or $300 lower. So many people say, well, price of gold will go down.
When you say, can you explain that, Ronnie? Because I think that might have gone over people's heads when you say real yields, because most viewers are going to say, well, what are you talking about, Ronnie? Real yields are massively negative right now.
Yeah.
So can you just unpack that a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, we're seeing a very, very tight correlation between the price of gold and real yields. So I always said it's not really the absolute level of real yields that counts, but
meaning
rather
the Fed funds minus the CPI.
Exactly. Yeah. Sorry. It's not the absolute level, but rather the direction and the momentum. And based on that, actually, it's a very, very tight correlation, and it decoupled recently. So people would suggest, well, actually, the price of gold is too high. My analysis, and then we would be at 1500. My conclusion would be that actually gold is kind of calling bullshit on the rate hikes.
Okay.
So I think that gold is already kind of sniffing out that, at some point they will have to reverse, many markets have already broken. And I think the price of gold is kind of discounting this already. Now, George, for a US dollar investor, and I mean our mutual friend Brent Johnson, I congratulated him on his call on Twitter recently, because he's been spot on. Yeah, great. Yep. Great call.
Nailed it.
Totally. And you know, the strong dollar is like a wrecking ball for markets all over the globe. On a euro basis, gold is up 8% year to date. So for us over here, it's been a really good inflation hedge, actually. So it perfectly did what it's supposed to do for a Japanese investor. I mean, Japanese, yeah, they're even further ahead in their monetary lunacy. Insanity. So gold is up 18% in Japanese yen terms. Yeah. So I agree. I think gold's role is not to make you rich. It's there as a conservative, as a defensive position in your portfolio. But let's face it, I mean, I, with all the turmoil, I would have expected significantly higher gold prices at the moment.
You mean lower?
No,
negative real yield or
no higher. I mean, you know, if we would have talked like 2 years ago and you would have told me, Ronnie, make a gold forecast for 2022. There's a war in the middle of Europe, basically.
Right.
Commodities went through the roof.
9.1% CPI.
9.1 CPI, and you know, everybody is just super nervous and frightened. Where would the price of gold be? I wouldn't have said 1700, probably. I would have said 2300, 2500, whatever. So we have to be honest and say, well, it's disappointing, but we shouldn't forget, first of all, strength in the US dollar. Then gold is one of the most liquid assets out there. And, you know, everybody in this phase of the market, we need liquid markets, we need liquid assets. So gold is often being liquidated. In these phases, like we saw in 2008, yeah, it was down big time, but
in
it
March
ended...
2020,
exactly. But then it was one of the first assets to basically sniff out that something's gonna happen, and basically made its lows earlier than all other asset classes. Now, George, if we have a look at the Commitment of Traders report, well, first of all, Sentiment Trader had a great piece. It said last week the selling pressure for the gold miners was enough to trigger one of the highest panic readings in nearly 40 years. So from a contrarian point of view, I would say, well, you know, everybody hates the gold miners. Now, obviously, gold miners are a different story to gold. But when you have a look at the price of gold and the Commitment of Traders report, I'm no expert on the Commitment of Traders report. I'm using it to navigate, to kind of know where on the map we are. It's not a timing indicator. It's like we had when we went sailing, we had another family and they were from Italy, and he was cooking all the time. Yeah, so
shocker.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And he prepared all those fantastic meals, and then at some point he shouted a tavola, so come to the table. Dinner is ready. And I think it's a bit similar with the commitment of traders report. I think the there's a great setup. I think everything is prepared, but nobody shouted a tavola, dinner is ready yet. But the setup is fantastic. Now we're seeing, for example, for gold, I've got the numbers here somewhere. There it is. We're seeing, first of all, the longs have been sliced to the lowest level since May 28th in 2019. For silver, they are down to 3,200 contracts, which is the lowest reading since June 2019. So actually, you know, the little guys, the retail investors, they are basically, they're out. While speculators, so the non-commercial long exposure, basically, has increased significantly, and we are also seeing that commercials, they reduce their short positions. So I think it's from a timing or from the setup is fantastic. So I think somebody has to ring the bell, and this will probably be the point in time when the Federal Reserve hits the pause button. Is it going to happen very soon? I don't think so. I think it's going to be tough over the summer, although seasonality for gold in August and September is basically the best phase for the price of gold. But I think, and this is what really counts, this is a decent risk reward ratio that I'm seeing for gold. And of course, if dollar should roll over at some point, which could also happen, then I think this should be a further stimulus. So I think the setup isn't, I think it's good, but it would be naive to think that it's all going to happen over the next couple of trading days. It's going to take time.
And I would also say that I don't know that ringing the dinner bell even needs to be the Fed pausing, but just the Fed talking about pausing.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's all about expectations.
Yeah. No, absolutely true.
Yeah. Okay. So one thing I wanted to point out with the gold miners that I saw today, and you know, I'm not as smart as you professionals. I'm just a mere amateur, just a blowhard on YouTube with a whiteboard and some markers. But one thing that I kind of just look for the charts, just inflation adjusted, if I can get it, just kind of see, okay, well, is XYZ cheap? And I was just looking at the GDXJ today, just on my phone at lunch. And this is just the ETF of the junior miners, correct me if I'm wrong there. And I noticed that the price right now is pretty much at the March lows of 2020, when gold did have that massive, massive crash. So for me, as someone who tries to buy things when they're cheap and sell them when they're expensive, I'm like, wow, if the price is all the way down to the March lows, that could be an opportunity. I'm not telling anyone I'm buying right now, but those gold miners that have been on my watch list for quite some time just got a lot more interesting now that I noticed the price is right back to where it was when we were facing a global pandemic.
Yeah, I think, George, to be honest, for the GDXJ, for the juniors, for the small caps, I just see that that, you know, financings at these levels are really tough. So everybody is kind of starving for capital, and I just don't see risk appetite coming back very quickly. So I think, you know,
maybe there's a reason why it's the price is so low. Not that it's cheap, but it's a cigar butt with only one more puff on it, to use a Benjamin Graham example.
No, I'm seeing, you know, for the companies that we follow and that we own, I'm seeing tremendous valuations and you know,
on the juniors or on the bigger gold companies.
Both. I think you really have to focus on quality at the moment. You know, there's probably very few sectors where there's so much, you know, aggressively advertised rubbish companies out there, like in the mining space. I think they will all be, how do you say, weeded out, which is something normal, which is something healthy. But I think, you know, for if you've done your homework, there's tremendous companies at great prices out there in the junior space. I mean, I'm on the board of directors at Tudor Gold. We're up in the Golden Triangle. We've got one of the largest resources over the last couple of decades being found, and it's a market cap of 230 million. You can tell. Yesterday we came out with terrific drill results, but the market is not really recognizing it. But I know that, you know, first of all, the large caps that still make shitloads, of free cash flow at the moment. They got their balance sheets in order. Yeah, they've got you know, big liquidity, big lines. They will take over lots of great projects out there. I just think that for the really small caps, it might be a little bit too early. And you don't have to go out so far on the risk curve. You can have really a very, very attractive risk reward also in the mid tier and even in the large cap space.
Okay, so the hesitancy there was that it may be a little too early on the juniors, and if you are looking into the juniors, ETF, probably not the best way to go about it. It's a stock picker's market, because there's some that are just garbage that might be in that ETF that you don't want to own at all, but there's some maybe opportunities out there with quite a bit of research.
Yes, I mean, if you, I'm not sure if mining stocks are really a long-term investment or if you can either be a great stock picker and, you know, just know the geology, understand good projects, or you can be a great timer. I mean, it's if you do both, then it's perfect. But I haven't met too many managers in this space who are great stock pickers and great market timers. So I think, you know, for a quick trade, yes, you can go with the GDXJ, and there's even levered ETFs, and then there's call options on them. Of course, I mean, vol has been pretty high, so they're not cheap.
Now we're getting into GameStop here, Ronnie.
So, but this should not be the foundation of your family wealth, I would
right.
say. Yeah,
understood.
But for a quick trade, it makes it. But you know. I had a look, for example, before at the large caps in the commodity space, and first of all, we are seeing this cycle. We've seen a brutal bear market in commodities. We are writing about the CapEx cycle at length in our new report. And I think, you know, if you have a look at really well-run companies like Vale, I mean, they produced like 20 billion of free cash flow last year. And
which company is that, Ronnie?
Vale. From Brazil, one of the largest iron ore producers.
Okay.
They paid out like 10 billion in regular dividends and 10 billion in extra dividends, and they are making share repurchases. Glencore has a free cash flow yield of roughly 25%. So you really find a tremendous amount of value in the large caps. And I know from talking to pension funds and large institutional players, for them, it's really tough to invest in everything that has to do with commodities, because due to ESG, they're simply not allowed.
All right.
So therefore, I think you've got as a private investor, you actually have an advantage over the institutional players, and you can pick up really, really good companies, large companies, very well diversified at bargain prices at the moment. So that's what I just wanted to say. You don't have to buy the super, super junior gold mining company. There's also great opportunities in the large caps at the moment.
Got it. What's the production cost just on average to get the gold out of the ground and to sell it all in? Is it 1500? Is it 1600? Is it, where is it right there for gold specifically?
I don't know the Q1 2022 number, to be honest. It must be around 1250 to 1300,
Okay.
which is, of course, you're seeing obviously energy prices have a large impact, but also labor, especially skilled labor. I mean, who has studied mining engineering or geology over the last couple of years? I mean, nobody. I mean, everything is, I don't know, gender studies or into tech or whatever. And this is, to find really good, young, ambitious geologists that need 10, 20 years to be really to become really experienced senior guys on the field. So there's a huge time lag. But then you're also seeing, it's not only labor, it's also capital costs, obviously, that have risen. So actually, I would say between 1200 to 1300 would be the all-in sustaining cash costs, which gives the company still a decent margin at the moment.
Right.
And of course, we don't need gold prices to skyrocket. Those companies are already making a great amount of free cash flow. They have the last M&A activity that I'm following. I think it was really there were some smart moves. I would say the industry has a very, very poor history, and the M&A deals that we saw at the peak of the last cycle, they were just ridiculous. But now I think they're much more prudent. I'm seeing fantastic balance sheets. It is just, and I think, a couple of years I would have never expected to once say that. I think the gold miners, the large caps, are really a value play at the moment.
Interesting. Well, I'll definitely have to put that on my watch list as well. Ronnie, where are we with copper, silver, uranium?
Well, for silver, I have to say it cannot decouple from gold. As soon as the price of gold starts rising, the price of silver will, of course, with probably like 3 to 1, will rise as well. I think for the commitment of traders report, that's even more bullish for silver than for gold. But it's gonna take some time. And normally, silver lags the price of gold a couple of weeks. So gold makes it bo its bottom, and then silver follows. From a supply demand picture, I think it's silver isn't 100% a monetary metal like gold is. It's also an industrial metal. I think with all those green applications and over here in the energy space, there's so much going on because we want to get rid of fossil fuels and imports from Russia. So there's really, really lots of capital flowing into EVs, into innovation, which is it's gonna be great going forward. But I think for silver, it is a bit overestimated. Many people say, well, we've got EVs and we've got the solar industry, and this will drive the price of silver. I don't think so, because those solar panels are getting so much more efficient that it just needs significantly less silver for their panels. It's one additional driver, perhaps, but not the driver. But still, if we have a positive long-term outlook for gold, which I do, because I think it's one of the very few cheap assets out there, versus the money supply, versus the S&P, versus many other asset classes, real estate, and so on. We are far below the inflation-adjusted all-time highs. Then I think that silver should be a great investment going forward. Uranium, we've got one uranium fund that is doing really well. I mean, the last 2 years were terrific. Over here, if you like 3 years ago, if we tried to market a uranium fund,
Oh yeah.
I mean,
Probably got shot in the street.
we didn't get any appointments at all, because people say, well, you're investing in nuclear bombs or what is it? Yeah, it was like the worst, but this has changed, you know. There's kind of a renaissance of nuclear energy happening, because, you know, it's cheap, it's reliable, it works 24/7, and we just need the base load. So I'm seeing great opportunities there. And for copper, I have to say, well, you know, it's as we always say, it has a PhD in economics, but then probably gold is a professor when it comes to monetary debasement. Mm-hmm. And the price of copper is telling us at the moment, well, a recession is in the house. So I wouldn't expect too much from copper. But also here, I think from the supply side, if you have a look at the CapEx cycle, if you have a look at large projects, and if you even make a conservative forecast for EVs, for the new demand that is coming from this whole green revolution, and there are so many people that know much, much more about the topic, then I just cannot see copper not doing well over the next couple of years. And, you know, this is like a bull market in commodities that nobody's really invested in, because, as I've said, the large players, they are simply not able or not allowed, due to ESG policies, to invest in everything that has to do with commodities, because you know, whoever wrote the rules, everything that has to do with commodities is dirty and bad. This is going to change, of course, but there will be a rude awakening.
I remember, and I think this is a chart that you either saw on your Twitter feed or in your report, In Gold We Trust report. And that was a chart of long-term super cycle in commodities. And so I believe that we're most likely living through another one of these super cycles that probably started in 2020, maybe ends in 10, 15 years, you know, maybe 2030, 2035. What is your view?
I mean, if our assumption is right that stagflation is the name of the game, and we will see a bit of a replay of the 1970s, and actually, you know, the foundation for the 1970s was laid in the 1960s, yeah, and I think there are many similarities. Then I think you should favor real assets, and we all know how gold, silver, energy, and commodities in general did in the 1970s. Of course, the cycle is slightly different, but we are now seeing, as I've said, nobody is really invested. We're seeing some flows into the sector, but still capital costs are very, very high for the companies. There's private institutions that are now stepping into the market. They really have a long-term plan, and they know that we'll, in 5, 10, 15 years, we will need these copper, gold, nickel, whatever supplies. Nickel is definitely one of my favorite metals out there, I have to say. So I think this cycle, it's not at the very, very end, but I think it's like, I don't know, in baseball terms, I think it's like the third or fourth inning, probably.
Yeah, I agree.
But the thing is, you know, I just, you know, if I did keynotes on gold, I think in 35 different countries, and the best questions that were ever asked, what would you say, which country was it?
On gold?
On gold, yeah.
The best, like the most sophisticated questions?
Yes, the smartest questions.
I would say either Canada, because that's where all the producers are, that's where all the metals guys are, or India.
No,
they love gold there.
Turkey.
Ah, okay.
I did presentations in Istanbul, and I've met really some of the smartest people in the gold industry ever. Asset managers, you know, with a very, very broad mandate. But for them, because they're used to high inflation rates. They're used to a weak currency, actually a currency that just devalues all the time. For them, it's just normal to own some gold. It's just natural. And it's the same, the same probably in Brazil. It's the same in India.
Argentina, for sure.
So I think we will come as this great moderation is over now. I think we will likely come into an environment where people will say, well, gold isn't like a satellite investment, where all the big banks, they said, well, you know, you should own 1 to 2% gold in your portfolio. Well, I always said, I mean, that's nonsense. It doesn't really have an impact on your overall portfolio. So I think we will move into an environment where everybody's going to say, well, 10 to 15% gold allocation just makes sense. So gold is coming from a satellite investment. It's coming to the core again. Mm-hmm. And this is, from my point of view, really the central long-term case for gold. People will realize, well, we do have this inflationary environment now. People have this inflationary mindset, and I think this is really changing now. And therefore, we will all, to some degree, get more knowledgeable about the topic of gold, about the topic of inflation, what works in inflation and what doesn't work in inflation. So I think this is really, and you know, let's face it, over the last 40 years, inflation for an asset manager wasn't a topic at all.
Right.
I mean, that's like the 10th thing that you actually followed when it came to portfolio construction. Now this is really becoming the central topic, and you know, we wrote like a couple of thousand pages of research about gold, and gold should do really well in such an environment.
Yeah, absolutely. Ronnie, appreciate your time, my friend. It's always fun to chat. For the viewers and listeners who want to find out more about what you do and download your incredible report free of charge, where can they go?
Well, the webpage of our report is ingoldwetrust.report. You can download this year's edition totally for free. You don't have to subscribe or anything. Give us your email address. You can just download it. There's an extended version, which is roughly 400 pages. It's a long read, but I think it's worth your precious
Absolutely.
Time. But there's also a compact version. We've got it in German, in English, in Mandarin, and starting this year, also the compact version in Spanish.
And Turkish.
In Spanish.
No, I'm joking.
Turkish.
Because remember Turkish, you said Turkey, perhaps, they had the best questions.
Turkish perhaps next year, but I will have a hard time with proofreading. And yeah, our webpage for the company is incrementum.li. We're a boutique asset manager focusing on, you know, commodities, precious metals, obviously, but also combine Bitcoin with hard assets, with precious metals. So yeah, have a look at our webpage. And I'm also pretty active on Twitter at Ron Stoefele. That's my handle.
Awesome. Ronnie, I appreciate your time, buddy. Can't wait to do it again.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, George. All the best. Take care, my friend. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Rebel Capitalist Show. For more content like this, check out the Rebel Capitalist blog at georgegammon.com or go to the George Gammon YouTube channel.